Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
It's so hot and it's awesome. Welcome in, Sabres Live. Are we talking about offer sheets? Are we talking about the residual fallout from free agency or projecting the Sabres lineup for this fall?
Talking about my posture.
We're talking about your posture. And I wanted to ask you, what am I thinking about as we start this show today? And the hint is, it was breaking news at the end of yesterday's show.
Breaking news at the end of the interview with Mark Pisick?
No. Daniel Alfredson.
Oh, Daniel Alfredson, yes.
So that was a nugget at the end of the show yesterday, like Alfredson leaving Ottawa, joining the Maple Leafs. And we talked about how it's disturbing for both fan bases. What if Alfredson is solely going there to destroy the Leafs from from the inside out? He ends up being associate coach for just 1 year and then mysteriously goes,
I'll go back to Ottawa.
Well, because they've never, ever been able to beat the Maple Leafs.
So it's hilarious you say that because, okay, somebody on Twitter did this caricature of the Trojan horse, right?
Oh, yeah.
And it is like, if you know the story of the Trojan horse, so it's a big Ottawa Senators horse with their mascot in the belly of it,
yes,
coming to the gates of Maple Leaf,
yes,
Kingdom, and everybody says, looks good to me. Nothing to see here. Well, come in. And then he comes in, and it's a Trojan horse of Daniel Alfredson. Now, I loved how the Ottawa Senators put a release out saying, look, their owner,
Landauer,
he came in and he said, the first time that when I bought the team, one of our first moves was to bring Daniel Alfredson back into the fold, right? And although he said it's very disappointing to a certain extent, I paraphrase here, to see him leave to an arch rival. He used the word arch rival. The door is always wide open for Alfredson to come back anytime, whatever. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's a good public relations thing.
Oh,
but
it's true because
he's
equivalent
Mr.
for
Ottawa
anybody
Senators.
That's loved the Sabres from day one. It's no different than if Perreault left to go work for the Maple Leafs as soon as his career was done. Like these are the pillars of the franchise history, and obviously Gilbert would have always been welcome back. Now, how wide are the gates as far as, you know, opportunity for the Sabres here and others? But more specifically, on our Sabres Live poll question today, who will be a Sabre by the end of this offseason? Is it Connor Hellebuck? Is it Pat Kane? Is it both? Is it neither? Hit us up at Sabres Live.
So right now, neither is leading the way at 38%. Both is at 32%. Those are the two favorite answers. And I think that's pretty accurate in the way that I look at it, is that one comes with the other. And I will explain. So if the Sabres were to make a move for Connor Hellebuck, I believe it is with a package that includes a roster forward on the package. So
Well, especially now that the four pick isn't involved.
Yeah, exactly. That you cannot, like, well, maybe you still throw in a first. You're probably throwing in a first round pick next year. Yeah.
You could always trade Dax and Rudolph.
You could, although, you know, I don't think that would be in the cards, because you're not getting the eighth overall pick, and maybe that's the guy you would have picked anyway. Like, who knows, right? It could go anyway. But I think that if you acquire Connor Hellebuck, you're moving a roster forward, which opens up a hole, and that hole would be filled with a Patrick Kane. I think they come together. Which one is more likely to happen as itself, though? Like, is Connor Hellebuck more likely to happen or Patrick Kane more likely to happen? I think I would go to the Patrick Kane side. I think for me right now,
it's less complicated, for sure.
It's very much less complicated. Fitting in a forward, you know, is a lot easier on a roster that maybe is full of forwards, but you don't have to move anybody out. You could do that. If you acquire a goaltender and you don't move any other goaltenders, you're kind of in a tough spot. So I think Patrick Kane alone is more likely to happen, but I agree, either both of them together or neither of them, because the Connor Hellebuck deal may or may not happen, I think that would be the right answer.
Anything new on, and by the way, Daniel Alfredson is speaking to the media at 1 o'clock today. So if you want
to. He is an associate coach, which
is
different
semantics.
Than semantics, but. Yeah. You know what? Jim Hiller is the head coach in Toronto.
Yeah, but he
and
also,
maybe the door opens for Dalia Alfredson to take over.
Alfredson comes in. Newsy LaLonde gets punted because of it. And John Gruden, who won the Calder Cup as head coach of the Marlies, yeah. also got elevated. And John and Alfie were teammates in Ottawa. This is yeah. when I covered the Senators before, you know, this is way back, late 90s, early 2000s. John was actually a wonderful kind of journeyman guy, mm-hmm. and I was, you know, really happy to see this elevation for him. And
Mike Van Ryn also out, so
exactly,
that whole
yeah.
staff that
Brad
had Mark Savard, Newsy LaLonde, Mike Van Ryn, whatever, with Craig Berube, they're all out.
Okay, so quickly on offer sheets, I would imagine that we'll get news on Barrett Hayton today at 12:56.
Yes,
the minute after we're done, and also we're getting within a couple of days now of the decision that needs to happen from Anaheim's perspective, matching Leo Carlson. Offer sheet world in your brain right now. What are you thinking? What are you hearing? Have your expectations changed here?
My expectations have not changed. It's interesting to me.
Because people are looking for ways to validate.
Because the longer it goes, why are you not matching
not
right away?
Longer. But nobody ever does. Everybody always waits, don't
they? Until the last minute.
Yeah.
Now, that's like was a conversation at the draft. The teams have 3 minutes or 5 minutes in between picks, and they wait the whole 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And some I heard it on a podcast somewhere. They're like, why do teams do that? And they're like, because you never know. If somebody calls you 5 seconds before you're about to make your pick and they offer you something and then you're like, okay, I'll make that deal. So you always keep the door open. But with an offer sheet.
Do you want me to ruin Christmas for you and tell you that the only reason is actually for television purposes?
It could be, but you know what? When you went 4+ hours last draft,
always
I think you got to shorten
it. It's a disaster. Anything
yeah.
that was supposed to be 3 on the old school TV guide.
Extended. Like if you had,
an
you had
award
to set
show,
your VCR. You set your VCR or your DVR for recording. You had to record extra and maybe the next show to make sure you didn't miss the end, right?
Anyway, we digress.
We digress. It's weird for Utah, for example, to wait all 7 days to make a decision on Barrett Hayton.
Yeah.
It's $4.775 million on a one-year deal. You should make that decision within 15 minutes
mm-hmm.
and say, okay, we're matching or we're not,
right?
And go ahead. Now, Leo Carlson, it's a little bit more difficult because I would guarantee you that internal meetings are happening and they're like, how did this happen? I want answers.
Right.
You're the owner. You come down to the GM's office and say, how did this happen? I want an answer. Well, now that's not just a 15-minute conversation.
No.
That could be, we're going to start a conversation today. Let's put a pin in it. We're going to talk about it tomorrow. We're going to talk about it the next day. And then all of a sudden you're 4 days in
mm-hmm.
and you haven't figured out why did this happen. And then you got to make the decision on Leo Carlson. And now the more it goes, the more people are starting to think, okay, would actual Leo Carlson signing the offer sheet and going back to Anaheim be beneficial to the Anaheim Ducks and their young players, knowing that, hey, you know what? We didn't do everything we could to sign you. You went out somewhere else, and now you're coming back to us. Like but because it's so long, all these potential storylines, like soap opera storylines, are opening up.
Well,
right? Because it's like if you're on the air every day, you're going to come up with some different storylines, and mm-hmm. that's what we do.
Yeah, and I think obviously from the Ducks standpoint, they have to exhaust all options, i.e. trade partners, if it were to go the wrong way, in my opinion, which is Carlson going to Philadelphia.
They have to explore that too.
They have
right.
to explore because they're not going to use the picks, obviously. So,
if you're like, let's see, we're not bringing Leo Carlson in.
Yeah.
Can we replace him? So you're making calls. You're making calls to like Buffalo. You're making calls to Montreal. You're making calls to Chicago, whatever.
Yeah.
What can we replace Leo Carlson with if we don't sign him?
Right. And Helene St. James of the Detroit Free Press mm-hmm. Reiterated that Dylan Larkin hasn't changed his list of teams that he would go to. So that also keeps Anaheim on the outside looking in if they were to pursue Larkin after the dust settles on this, because Larkin chose Florida, Minnesota, Vegas. So who knows what other options would lay for Anaheim, who, as you would expect, if you've followed the writing career of Sean McIndoe in The Athletic, like he looks at things and tries to put his little twist on it.
Yes.
And so he wrote today about the fan bases, the eight of them that should be most insulted by the offseason so far across the NHL. He actually had Buffalo at eight. And of course, it was more because of the players that left. And at this point, nobody really coming in. But it was let's just say a soft eight. But what's really interesting is the teams at the top and who you think should be most insulted. I obviously would have gone Anaheim.
100%.
But Seattle, and even Sean wrote, is surprisingly his first one as far as fan bases that would be most insulted by this offseason.
Well, I think that you have to also think, how do you get insulted if you're a fan, right? Do you get insulted because your GM absolutely mismanaged assets?
Anaheim.
Or do you, Anaheim? Or do you get insulted as a fan because people are saying no to coming to Seattle? Like, how does one is measured against the other? And that's, I think that's why the Seattle Kraken are number one on that list. Basically saying, Jason Robertson, we're going to give you $15 million per year. We're going to trade assets to acquire you from Dallas. Do you want to come here? And the answer is no. And you're like, why? Like, we're a great city. We're a great organization. We're giving you all that money. Why are you not? I don't want to go to Seattle. Well, that is obviously very disappointing to fans, people that have pride in their region, pride in their team, pride in the city. So that's why Seattle's number one. Mm-hmm. But I personally, because of my hockey side of things, I would be so insulted if I was the Anaheim Ducks fan base saying that, now, we made the playoffs last year. We had this big move forward, and this is how you repay us as fans? Mm-hmm. By mismanaging it? That's where I would be.
Detroit and Ottawa rounded out Sean's top three on The Athletic.
But Detroit and Ottawa is because people want to leave.
Right. But
and
wait,
Columbus.
There's more on our show today. Emphasis on the butt. Mark Pressick coming up here, and you'll enjoy it. Trust us. Stay with us.
Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We are looking at you and your groups of 10 or more. Exclusive group experiences, more access, more memories, more action. There are great ways to save and experience through a large group experience. Go to sabres.com/groups. Who knows? Maybe you'll have a big group right before Christmas to celebrate the holiday season.
Pezzik gaining the line. He takes a shot. Rebound! He shipped it up in the air. It's right to go, please. Where's the puck? Is it in the net? The Sabres think it's in the net. The goaltender's in the net.
Watch this. The puck's going to drop right here. Hansel tries for it. It falls right in the back of his pants.
Lord.
And watch this.
Oh,
it's laying in his pants, and he's going to take it. Right there, right into the net. You can see the puck laying on the top of his pants, on his jersey, in the net. This is going to be a good goal. You see it right there. You can see the puck right there. See it?
Yeah, I see it, but I've never seen anything like this before.
It's Christmas.
Ever.
It's Christmas.
Well, it's Christmas for one team.
12-23-13, one of the greatest goals in Sabres history, and it couldn't have been called any better by RJ and Razor, and the author of it, Mark Pessick, with us here on Sabres Live. Mark, it is great to see you. How nice is it to never be too far away from that goal?
Yeah, no, it comes up every, I think it was the 20, what did you say, the 23rd of December?
Yeah.
Yeah, so every time around Christmas time it pops up, But every time people start sending it to me when it's on Twitter or Instagram and stuff, but it always says Mike Smith's goal. And I'm like, hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey. Somebody had to float that muffin in, hit him right in the stick, right?
Bounce it up in the air. It was planned. It was just, and the best part about the clip is your reaction right in front of the net, but also Enzo's reaction. Like, Tyra Ennis is coming in like, I want that rebound. I'm going to bury that.
Yeah,
and then that disappears on him, and he's like, what happened? So Enzo's reaction is great. But obviously, that was your first stint with the Buffalo Sabres, and then you also came back just 4 years ago. Well, four and a half, 5 years
ago.
We'll
get to that part in a little bit.
But the first stint, let's just So drafted in the first round and everything, Tyler Ennis, Tyler Myers, like a lot of those guys, do you still keep in touch with everybody from that era and those that you grew up in your first few years of pro hockey?
A little bit here and there. You know, everybody gets older, has kids. Foligno was there. I think he's probably the one that my wife and his wife are very good friends. So, you know, sometimes I'll come home from the rink and she's on FaceTime shushing me and it's Foligno's wife. And then we have a little chat there. So we've kept in touch with them. Tyler Myers, Tyler Ennis. It's always good to, you know, share some funny videos back and forth on social media, which seems like the way that you keep in touch from people with your past nowadays. So it's definitely cool that we all grew up together there and did that. And then it's kind of crazy that, you know, that era, I'm sure it happens to every hockey player, is kind of getting older and on the way out. You know, you see guys retiring that you played with that were right around your age and you're like, holy mackerel, this went by very fast. It seems like it was, honestly, last summer we were coming to development camps and, you know, living in Buffalo, having the time of our lives, and then you just wake up one day and everybody's married, kids, and definitely slowed down.
I'm glad you both mentioned Tyler Myers, because everyone needs to revisit this video. Take a look.
Hi, I'm Tyler Myers.
And I'm his friend, Mark.
We want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
And a Happy New Year.
And this, of course, you know, very festive moment, and we've already established that.
How many takes did it? Is this like an hour long trying to get it figured out?
Or yeah.
Were you the pro? One take, and it's good.
No, I think he was the pro. I probably kept messing it up, and he just probably said, "Come in for 5 minutes, and we'll do it." And we were there the whole afternoon for a 5 second video.
Well, sometimes my questions feel like they're 5 minutes long. Like, take a look at this. Is it has an odd similarity to the video we just saw.
They can easily go unnoticed in a game. How have you been able to just kind of, you know, master is the wrong word because you're going to say I'm too young in my career to do this, and you're going to get used to John Scott being behind you because that's part of the routine here as well.
Is there a way to describe John Scott and that era with the Sabres?
Oh, I think that's it right there, that video. Just pure fun. I remember laughing so hard with him on the plane or at team dinners. He was obviously such a force on the ice, but it's so funny getting to know, you know, a lot of the tougher guys seem to be the funniest, the nicest, and kind of the softest off the ice. And I think he had three or four girls, which was probably
multiplied over the last few years. Funny enough, I played with John Scott with the Rangers before he came to Buffalo. Of all the players I've played in my career, I think he, more than anybody else, surprised me for the funny, like, easygoing guy that he is, but how smart he is. We used to play, like, Words with Friends or, like, these things, and he used to crush us all the time. Like, did he showcase how smart he was in the locker room here, too, to all of you guys?
I mean, he probably did, but I think that when you have someone that's that quick with their humor and they're always, you know, they always have the perfect thing to say, you can tell that their mind's just going and firing all the time, which he always had. And like I said, we laughed so hard and I thought he was so funny and still is, obviously, I think that showcases his intelligence there for sure.
With Mark Pesek, who is still playing, and we'll touch on that in a minute, you are chasing, undoubtedly, every year, that kind of elusive pro championship. You had a WHL championship to close out your junior career, and when you look at the video and this role that you had with the Oil Kings in Edmonton, can you name the two other players on that team that would become future former Sabres?
Oh,
future former Sabres. Let me think.
It's not fair because I think I'm cheating right now by looking at the list of the
roster.
That
is cheating. Yes, that is the definition. That is the definition.
One just happened for a few games last.
The start of last season.
The start of last season.
Yeah. Big tough guy.
Big tough guy. Mason Geertsen.
Mason Geertsen. Yeah.
That is one of them.
And did Curtis Lazar ever make his way?
Curtis Lazar. Yeah, good for you.
Okay, that's what I was thinking first. But yeah, okay. Yes.
Yeah, Laser was here for a little bit.
Still going.
Still going, but yeah, Mason Geertsen was here at the start of last year.
And still in Rochester this coming
season. Still in Rochester this season. But yeah, a couple of them. You also had Tristan Jarry and Laurent Brossois as goaltenders over there, and they're still kicking. So there's still a few of you guys that are hanging. How is it now that you are older, wiser, a veteran? The difference, your approach in the off season compared to when you were here in Buffalo with a bunch of young kids and just working out and in at the arena and all of that.
Yeah, I think it's different. Obviously, when you get older, you don't have to. I don't think you have to do quite as much of the strength stuff. You kind of got that base there, but the trying to stay quick and powerful, that's
limber.
Proving to be. Yeah, exactly. And limber, that's the challenge now, is just staying a little bit younger. I think if you could some way show a 21, 22-year-old what it feels like to be 34, they would be stuck in bed all day. Because you can't. There's days where you get out of bed, and to get to the bathroom, you're walking slow. And I mean, it comes around, you get going and moving, but it does. It really takes a long time to get going. But I mean, everybody that's been fortunate enough to play into their 30s, and obviously some guys in their 40s figure it out, and they realize it, and it is a privilege to keep playing. So you fight through that, because I think once it's over, you'll for sure miss it. But when you are young, you notice the guys. I remember Matt Ellis, he was a machine still, and he wasn't that old, but he I remember the time he spent in the gym, and we're looking at him like before practice, he's working out, and we're like, well, what's he doing that for? You know, like, we'll do that after. You don't have to warm up. Just come sit and have a coffee. But now you definitely realize why guys are doing that for sure.
And it's still going for you. Take us through this European journey that you've been on the last two seasons and the two locations, and where you expect to continue that this year.
Yeah, not this past season, the one before. We were in a small Finnish town, Lappeenranta. The team name is Saipa, and I was away from the family for a little while, longer than I had been, I think, since the kids were born, probably. But the amount of fun, and like small little Finnish town, I'd never been to Finland living. We went for one of the global series just to visit, but it was unbelievable. It was so cool playing there, and we had a good team and a good run, and the fans, it's like a, you know, it's smaller rink, maybe 5,000 people, but when we started rolling, it was completely full and loud the entire game, and we went through playoffs pretty well. I think we swept one of the big teams in Helsinki. And it was just like, you could feel it around the city. It was so cool. There's no real, like, it's hard to explain. And the sauna's there, and just the whole atmosphere of Finland was so much fun. And the family, when they came to visit, the kids weren't in school. So I'd go to practice, come home, and we'd just go find a snow hill and walk around the town. And it was, the people there were amazing. And yeah, we lost in the finals, but I think we did a good job there, and we're pretty close to winning that one. And then the last year we were in Prague, which I had no idea what to expect, but everybody that I told I was going there said, you're going to love it. And they were absolutely right. Obviously the city's amazing, but the team, the arena, they treat us like it's, I mean, it's outside of the NHL. It's pretty close the way that we get treated. And obviously we're on the bus and you're not flying around, but everything that the team does for us in the arena, I think we get, you know, 15,000 fans every night, and the atmosphere in Europe is so much louder, like a constant chant and everything. And you go into the away arenas and you feel the hatred towards our team, and just the whole different dynamic is so much fun. And I mean, I don't compare it directly, but I'm glad that I obviously glad I got to play in the NHL and experience that. But I'm also very glad and fortunate to experience this side of it as well, because it's so new and exciting, and the family's absolutely loving it. So we're back there the next 2 years, and after that we'll see what happens. But it's fun just experiencing something kind of different in the hockey world.
How old are the kids, and how easy is it for them to assimilate in your career at this point?
My son is 5 and my daughter is 7, so it's pretty easy for them. We had them in school over in Prague, sort of international school, but the speed at which they pick up like the Czech words and the Finnish words, and they're playing with kids from different countries. And the one funny, we just drove over to Germany to this hotel, and they're playing with these two German kids, and they're using our phone to translate, you know, mm-hmm. the Google Translate. So they're talking, passing it. And then finally at the end of the conversation, they're like, "Can you want to come play with us?" And this little German girl goes into the phone and she goes, "Okay." And then they wait, all the kids are waiting for the translation. They hit translate and the phone goes, "Okay." And we all just burst out laughing. Like, we're so dialed into this phone and the translation, but we were howling laughing. But just seeing them, you know, interact with that is something that I don't think, you know, I mean, a lot of people never get the chance to do that. So for them to do that is pretty cool.
Do you get to see former Sabres Al Kotelik and here Novotny in Prague? Because when I was here in Buffalo with Al, he kept saying, "You come to Prague, I get you Czech beer." And it was a big thing. Yeah. So do you see those guys around? And Victor, you know, with the Sabres Czech and Slovakian fan club and all of them. So do you see Sabres fans and former Sabres players over there?
Well, one of the first weeks I was there, Michael Neuwirth walks up and he's like, "Hey, Mark." I'm like, "Oh my goodness." He's like, "Do you remember me?" And I'm like, "I'm in Prague. I'm jet lagged. I have no idea." And he says, "It's me, Newby." And I'm like, "Oh, wait." So I've run into a few from there. Who else is the one? Shane Morrison.
Yes.
So I ran into him there too. But yeah, Newby's the goalie coach of our team now, starting this year. So yeah. There's been a few obviously that I run into, and it's pretty cool that the Sabres are everywhere, I guess.
Make sure you tell Nuvi that I still shave my head every year with Bald for Box. He was the one that actually, I was coming down the escalators, everybody was in the atrium at KeyBank Center and, you know, doing the head shaving, and he goes, "Marty, come here. Sit down." And then he just grabbed the clipper and zoom, zoom, shaved my head. And now, so he was the one that got it started. So you say thank you, because we've raised a ton of money and with Bald for Box. So yeah, he's always going to be in my thoughts when we do that. So that's awesome.
Oh, that's cool.
Mark's rocking a fresh cut now, too.
I know. Look at that hairdo.
You look so young.
It used to be spiky and all over the place. Now it's nice and,
it's not. Now I'm a beard guy. We were saying I haven't been in the playoffs, but that year in Finland, that was the first long playoff run I had been on. And then I got it trimmed up before we came home, and my wife's like, "Hey, I like it." So now I'm a beard guy, which it's not my choice.
Even in your second stint, unfortunately, with the Sabres, were you a beard guy. But why did you come back for the second time? And take us through, you know, how that kind of bookended your time with Buffalo and just what it all, I guess, has meant for you personally now at this stage of your career.
Yeah, we were excited to come back. Obviously, when you're doing one-year deals from team to team, it's not like you have the pick of 32 teams. But I think we had a couple offers on the table at least, and then just the familiarity with the city, obviously, and the ownership, the coaches, everything. We were excited to go back, and we did at that point have both kids, so we thought it'd be cool to show them where, you know, kind of where it all started for dad. And we were hoping it wasn't going to be the end of my time in North America, and it wasn't. I think I signed one more year, but I was hurt that year all year. Yeah. So it was cool that the last game I played was for the Sabres, obviously the first one as well. And it was such a it's so fun now to look back and see the success and cheer for the Sabres. You always see, but when you're playing, the, you know, the alumni, they still carry that, the pride, and they still cheer for them. And when you're playing, you don't really understand it, obviously, but when you're a little bit removed from it, you see how cool it is and how fun it is to cheer with your buddies and, you know, hope for the Sabres' success.
Well, and you had a hand in helping develop some of, you know, these young defensemen. Like, listen in to the guidance that you were providing in this clip for Owen Power.
Oh,
how do you like these drills, man?
Have you guys gone yet?
No. Oh, yeah. Would you change any of these drills?
What's that?
Would you change any of these drills? Yeah, I was mic'd up just to talk to you, and I didn't even see you all day. So you need to answer one question. Did you have fun today? Okay, good.
You got a very talkative Owen Power that day. Yeah, right? That was very important. But that last year, you talk about, I mean, we had the Heritage Classic in Hamilton, Ontario, that whole game against Toronto. You guys wore the Flint Tropics uniforms, right? Like the Mega Bowl. Let's go. Let's win our Mega Bowl. And RJ's last call, obviously, that last game against Chicago and the Casey Middlestad goal, the Malcolm Subban coming out to sing the national anthem.
Singing,
like, for those that don't remember, like, that was a pretty cool year. And it kind of set up a lot of those players, the Tage Thompson, the Darlene, the Power, and those, for what they've been able to accomplish. So was that a special year, other than the fact that that was your last, you know, year fully in the NHL, but, you know, the relationship with the team and the fans that year?
It was. You know, we had such a fun year. Obviously, I had a fun year. It was fun being around the younger guys, being on the other side of it that time, just seeing how bright the future was and how excited the fans were and the whole city was for, you know, the next coming years. And it's good to see that it's really happening. Like, you can see the success there now, and the guys seem to still be enjoying it, which is obviously something we did that year. Watching, you look back and you see those guys, they've all come into their own, and they're all, you know, stars, and it's cool to see them in that light, obviously, but it's cool to have those experiences and those memories with them, you know, kind of away from the rink at the Bills games and stuff like that too. So
in your time in Europe, have you been employed as a hybrid, both forward and defense? And along with that, was this hat trick with Florida against Toronto one of the highlights of your career? Mark, what do you think? Was it one of your highlights?
Yeah, I for sure was. And I always tell, well, there was the running joke there was whenever anybody would score two goals in a game, I'd always skate over and say, you know, that third one's the hardest to get. It's just, it's not an easy league to get a hat trick in. But I always tell the forwards too, like, both of those first two goals, you just stand in front of the net and the puck will come to you. I don't understand how guys don't get more goals playing forward. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It's easy, right? No, like, being a forward is so easy after you've played defense.
I'm so glad you got the empty netter for the hat trick. You have no idea how much that pleases me.
When you got tripped going for the empty net, did you think, I don't even need to put it in? Like, you could have shot in the corner. You would have been given the goal.
No, that's what everyone was saying. They're like, I don't know why you put it in. But I was like, it just by some off chance that it wasn't a penalty or it didn't get called, I'm like, I will do anything in the world to put this puck in the net because this is never going to happen again. And I mean, obviously it's never going to happen again, but it was fun and cool. And the guys were pretty pumped up. So that was definitely a highlight.
That's amazing. But I mean, is it true though? Because I know the defensemen always joke when they get to play a shift up front, and or you're before the game and you're like, hey, make sure we hit the D. Like, oh, it's so easy for a forward to always hit the D. Is it true it's easier to play forward?
I tell anybody that'll listen this, that when you're playing the fourth line winger role and there's no expectations on you, it's got to be one of the easiest jobs, but those expectations are what it is. Because as soon as somebody thinks, oh, well, you can't get scored on, or you have to be in the right spot,
yeah,
then it's a little bit more. But when you're thrown out there as a defenseman, I remember the first shift, I was in Florida, I think, and I got the puck on the wall, and I just chipped it out past the D-man, just into the neutral zone. And I was so nervous still, so I just got off the ice after, you know, a 10-second shift. And all the boys are hitting their sticks. Good play, Pesser, good play. And I look around, like, I look at the D-man, I'm like, that's a good play up here? Like, what? Where's the bar, you know? But then that's when I start thinking, like, the bar was so low for me to play forward that pressure was kind of, it was like, just go skate around and chase the puck. There'll be games where you don't even touch the puck as a winger and you are exhausted. You have to skate so much up there. But I think once the expectation gets there, it would be much, much more difficult.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because this week we had new Sabre defenseman Louis Crevier on the show. And to me, the answer that stood out for him was that he's excited to come to a situation where there are expectations.
Yeah.
So it's funny how you can look at it, yeah, embrace it, push it off if necessary in certain situations. But again, it's all part of the privilege of being a pro player. Do you have any other memories from your time in the organization, say from Rochester, other than your phone, because you still have a Rochester area code? Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I still do. Yeah. And it's fun when you're, you know, calling for a plumber or something. They always ask. So I get to say, oh, I was in Rochester for work. And if it's ever a hockey guy, it's fun to tell them playing for the Rochester Americans. But no, we talked about it. Our time in Rochester was definitely, you know, you're all growing up together with the guys and your girlfriends that are a lot of guys now wives. It was such a fun time, and very fortunate to play in such a good spot in the American League. You know, everybody that goes to Roch loves it and they get taken care of, and it was a blast. I was very fortunate to start there.
So obviously, because you're going back to Prague, usually you leave a little earlier. So, you know, the month of July is usually your last month before you got to go back out there. Going on vacation in the mountains this week? Like, you guys have a little outing going on?
Yep, it's our anniversary, 9 years. So we're going, my wife and I, as everybody with kids knows, it's hard to get away with just the wife. So my in-laws are taking them for two nights. So we're going to Banff, spend some time there. And then, yeah, I think that's our biggest trip this year. We were obviously, being in Europe, we had that Olympic break. So we took the kids to Paris Disney. So they've got their trip out of the way, so they can stay home with grandma and grandpa now.
Incredible. You're living an amazing hockey life, and we're privileged that you shared a lot of that journey with us today, Mark. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. And I don't know if you could see this. I put this on today just for you guys. I wear it at the gym every now and then.
Is that a Reebok branded one?
Ooh, I don't know. What is it allowed to be?
No, it doesn't matter. You're alumni. You can get away with everything.
Okay. I think what's this? Fanatics?
Oh, yes, Fanatics. Oh, it's from the second stint.
Yeah, it's
clearly.
Yeah, second stint. Yeah.
Beautiful. Mark, all the best. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me.
What a guy. Mark Pesek. So much fun. Guess what? The offer sheet has been matched. We discuss next on Sabres Live.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Poll results from our Sabres Live question today. Who will be on the Sabres by the end of the offseason? Hellebuck, Kane, both, neither? Marty?
Well, neither is leading the way. I think it's because we're getting to be almost mid-July now, and it's like, okay, if that would have happened.
Dude, it's the 8th. We're nowhere close to the mid.
We're almost. I said almost. We're a week from
mid-July. We debate this every year.
I know. We're at the end of July. We're at the end of August. You know, we're like, I think that's why Nider is leading the way.
Okay. I told you the offer sheet is done. It's been matched, and maybe earlier than anticipated. Barrett Hayton is staying with Utah on a one-year deal.
Not the Leo Carlson offer sheet, people, but we predicted it would be signed at 1 p.m., so that's why.
Time for D&D featuring MB43.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
people have never been able to stop talking about you.
Top, please.
Yes, here it is.
What a job Lindy Ruff and his coaching staff has done since taking over 2 years ago. He's one of three Sabre coaches ever to lead his team to the conference final. Floyd Smith did it in 75, Scott Bowman in 80. Martin Biron is the backup goalie. He's currently involved with Rochester, down 2-0 in the American League semifinals. This year in Rochester, 36-13-3 with a 2.08 goals against average. And scouts tell me he is the best goalie outside the National League today.
They say there's a future for that young man from Saint-Charles, Quebec.
Thanks to Dean Engel for finding the video. How much did you pay
job,
him?
Good job, Dean. Yeah, Bob Cole, Harry Neal, man, they were legendary, and it was pretty cool. Now, I will say this. I was a young man from Lac Saint-Charles, Quebec. Mm-hmm. Always will be. And I love how Harry didn't read the caption because he says 2.08, and on the screen it says 2.07. Nice. So I like the 07 better.
Well, you would have attempted to do this, and you certainly were dazzled by it because you love baseball. And last night we saw
what
a record
night.
Matched. Unfortunately, it was not eclipsed by Tyler Tolbert of the Royals, but he did have 5 hits last night, extending his streak to 12 straight at-bats with a hit. Unfortunately, he got out in the ninth inning, could have gone 6-for-6 and set the record, but nonetheless, incredible.
So incredible. What a comeback by the Royals on the Mets. The Mets are terrible. Sorry, Howard
Simon. So are the Royals, dude.
The Royals are terrible, too, but they're winning right now. 5 of those 12 hits were infield hits. Like, the ball never... He's so fast that he just gets to first, and that's the end of
just
it.
Just how many?
That's
like,
right.
Errors by the Royals in that same
they were
game.
Bad too.
This is disturbing, is it not?
This is disturbing. There was, some little league baseball-type plays, like a grounder to the pitcher ends up getting by the first baseman. He throws it back in. It goes
this
over
one is
the
amazing.
Home plate.
It's like, nowhere near anyone.
It was almost a dugout. And if I... that last player, I'm not forcing the play home. I don't want to take that error.
Eat it.
Just hang on to it because you know what? Another run scored. Man, there's so many little league baseball coaches right now. They're like, hang on to the darn ball.
Arms up in the air.
Yes.
It's incredible. And everybody was doing that with this dazzled moment from the World Cup.
Otra vez Messi. Se devía la pelota que cae al área. No pudo Julián Messi.
Sorry, we have no time left for your World Cup
get
update now.
Telemundo, right? And their calls. It almost sounded like a deflated balloon. Go! And it goes away. But what a comeback by Argentina. Down 2-0 to Egypt. And then Messi in the 83rd minute, mm-hmm. scores to make it 2-2. And then they ended up winning 3-2 in extra times and 90+2. And Argentina gets out of this bad situation. They found themselves against Egypt and now are moving to the quarterfinals.
Quarterfinals begin tomorrow, France and Morocco.
Yes.
Do you know on this date, you do know this, you were drafted
yes.
by the Sabres.
Yes, it was.
1995.
So it was a little later in July. Why?
Our
because
draft.
It was, you worked that draft offer. We were both in the same place. Because there was a lockout the year before. Season started in January, so it pushed everything down. So Alexander Mogilny was traded to Vancouver. Pekka.
8 goalies from that draft had more than 100 wins. Who were they?
Okay, John Sebastian Giguere, Mark Denny, Brian Boucher, myself. I don't know the other ones.
Brent Johnson, Chris Mason, Vesa Toskala.
Oh, Toskala.
In that list as well. We're fresh out of time. Offer sheet talk tomorrow. We'll see.